Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
So it's not a sin in your church to have an abortion?
That's the kind of conversation we would have, finding out your story, where you're from. God's the judge. People have to live to their own conviction.
The science is clear. The Bible is clear. And if we're honest, our intuitions are clear. We know what we're killing. We're killing a human being.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
It is time to start running things in parallel. This is Wretched Radio. If you've ever worked on any sort of a project, whether it's business or handiwork in your garage, there are two ways of doing things. You can run them in series, or you can run a project in parallel. It seems to me right now, you and I are more inclined to be of the mindset of running our Christian lives in series. Perhaps, however, we have enough anecdotal evidence to start thinking and living in parallel. For the last 40, 50 years in the U.S. of A., evangelicals who were dubbed the moral majority, which isn't exactly a biblical adjective that is the most gospel-centered, and we have worked hard to try to make the country a moral place, a place for human flourishing. There have been skirmishes along the way. No, there have been nothing but skirmishes along the way in this great big, what has been deemed a culture war. Well, now it sure seems that the battlefield has changed. And right now, evangelical Christians are feeling like they're surrounded on all sides. And I think that's actually the right feeling. But might I suggest, rather than focusing on, okay, how do we stave this off? How do we perhaps go about the business of making sure that this bad piece of legislation doesn't happen? And simply working on that, hoping that the inevitable day of Christian antagonism really unloads, let's just call it persecution, that we start doing both things. Yep. You can work, if you would like to, as an individual and as a church, to try to do things to make this country a safe place. And that is good, and that is noble. And I'm not suggesting for a second that anybody should stop doing what they think that they should be doing to be kind to people, to help people, to make the world a better place. That's swell. But I think we better start doing some other things along the way and thinking about this in parallel, because the signs are everywhere. Are we also, as we see our culture, getting completely bonkers? I mean, just absolutely dingy to the core. Are we doing the right things in preparation for the day when we Christians, it might just be as flagrant and blatant as it is in, say, I don't know, China or India or in Africa. Okay, there's three continents right there where Christians are just openly shellacked and they are condescended upon. Is that the right preposition? They are looked down on. Why wouldn't it happen here? There's no reason to believe that it couldn't. By the way, speaking of our brothers and sisters overseas, India. Christians faced 135 cases of persecution in the first half of 2020, believers lynched and sodomized. That's what's going on in India right now. In the meantime, by the way, in Europe, churches are under attack. A rash of arson and vandalism directed against European churches, most notably in Franke, wherever that is. 875 of the 42,258 churches. Did you know France had that many? You wouldn't know it.
Are they all still again, open?
Yeah, they are open. I don't know how alive they are. Most of them probably Roman Catholic, because if you recall, France did a bang-up job driving out the Protestants centuries ago. Nevertheless, there's 42,000 churches and 875 were vandalized last year. Thefts were reported in another 129. 59 cemeteries were vandalized. Now, that's not a record. 2017, there were over 1,000 acts of vandalism, but they're working on it. By the way, it's not just happening in France. In the good old U.S. of A., have you heard this in the news? I haven't. That churches are getting vandalized? That any sort of statues of churches, they're getting knocked down too? They're going on all over the country. It's not just in the places that you would anticipate, but nevertheless, they are going on every place. China begins brutal crackdown under new law in Hong Kong, starts arresting those calling for freedom. Nice. A piece of legislation passed, if you can call it that process. A vote of 162-0. Because you've got a lot of independent thinking going on in China with communism.
Yeah.
Violating the new law would result in a sentence of life in prison. What? Banning acts of sedition, subversion, and terrorism. We don't think that that could happen here. We don't think that attitude can't make itself known here. We like to think, well, we've got a constitution. There's amendments to we've got protection of freedom of religion. Mm-hmm. And for decades, that document has been deemed almost dead and not alive and not applicable. And we need to be on the right side of history and make some progress. In the meantime, 1,202 Nigerian Christians killed in the first 6 months of 2020. That's Nigeria. That's a country in a continent where this is going on. And right now, even in America, as we speak, there are even signs of some of that going on. Churches being lit on fire, pastors being stabbed and killed. We need to start thinking in parallel. Not waiting for the day it's going to come, but I would like to suggest you preparing for the day that it appears is most certain to come. Now, let's just say that I'm wrong. That there's not going to come a day in this country when Christians have a struggle to practice their faith. Now remember, not just to worship freely, but to exercise freedom of religion. That little word, freedom of religion versus freedom of worship, big difference. Oh, we'll let you worship in private. Just don't bring it outside of your church doors. Don't bring it into your home either. You can go to your little place if you want to. No tax breaks for you, by the way. And you just keep it to yourself. You don't keep it to yourself in foreign countries. You get arrested for those things. Now, let's just say that the day doesn't come when the evangelical church in the U.S. of A. is persecuted. If we are preparing for that day, will it have been in vain? Will it have been wasted that we are turning our sights and attention more toward, not exclusively, because you can be involved in the society as you see fit, keep doing those things as you choose, but are we spending focused time with our families in the Word? Are we spending time doing devotions with our kids? Are we encouraging one another? Are we fostering relationships with one another? Is our church family getting stronger? Are the ties that bind getting weaker, fraying, or are they growing in strength? Let's just say persecution doesn't come and we work on all of those aforementioned things. Would that be terrible? No. Am I suggesting, perhaps like Rod Dreher, that we somehow form some sort of Christian clique? No, not some sort of underground community at this point. Might have to. I'm talking about relationships and spiritual growth and being prepared for the day when people start to get arrested or when buildings do get closed down, or when it's impossible for certain Christian organizations to run because it is no longer legal for them to not pay taxes as a 501c3 religious nonprofit. There will be the shuttering of many doors. Are we running our lives in series? Just, okay, let's keep doing these things, and maybe there won't be any sort of fall of a nation and persecution of a church. Or are we running our lives in parallel as we watch the world? And by the way, this could be the single sign that we've come to the end right here. The Hallmark Channel, That's right. The Hallmark Channel is nothing sacred. And the answer is no. The Hallmark Channel, guess what? Are you shocked? To feature LGBT storylines, characters, and actors. We're committed to creating a Hallmark experience where everyone feels welcome. Well, everyone but Christians with some biblical sensibilities, that is. Furthermore, that statement is nonsense. Why? Because networks don't exist to create an experience where people feel welcome. They create an experience where they get more eyeballs so they can sell more spots for dollars. Nevertheless, Hallmark! Hallmark! No, it's not just the commercials. It's the storyline. Now you're going to, apparently now we're going to have a gay country singer who's kind of lost his way, needs to figure things out. So he has to go to the grandparents' estate, which is being sold because one of them died. They can't afford it anymore. And he finds himself in the town with a dude. And they do what they do on the Hallmark Channel.
So it's the same movie.
Smooch at the end. It's same movie. They're not going to mess with a formula that works. We're just going to change the genders inside of them. Christian, question. Are you running your Christian life in series or parallel? It might be time to make that switch. This is Wretched Radio.
Thank you for being here today. We always appreciate when you spend part of it listening to Wretched Radio. Did you know that there is something just like Wretched Radio available? Well, except it's 30 minutes long and it's got pictures. Yep, it's Wretched TV, hosted by Todd Friel, with live witnessing encounters and discussions on the tough theological issues and various other topics that make their way through the Christian community. To see Wretched TV episodes, you can check your local listings or, anytime day or night, visit wretched.org/TV. A big thank you to our gospel partners for making Wretched TV and, well, everything Wretched possible. If you are a gospel partner, thank you very much for your generosity. And if you're not, would you consider becoming one? Help us to continue to make things like Wretched TV available to everyone. Go to wretched.org/donate for details on becoming a Wretched monthly gospel partner. Wretched.org/donate. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
And now a message from our brothers and sisters in China.
If I have 1 minute for American brothers and sisters, I just beg them to pray for the supply of the Bibles, and God will open the door for the Chinese people to hear the love of Christ.
The government of China tightening the screws, doing everything that they can to eradicate Christianity from their communist regime. Our brothers and sisters, they have a prayer. It is not that the persecution would stop. It is that they would receive the word of God. There are a paucity of Bibles in China, and we can change that and provide the word of God for our brothers and sisters who are being persecuted, not just in China, but around the globe. Bible League International, $5 per Bible. Will you answer their prayer? Wretched.org/Bible.
Holding a newborn, playing with a puppy, eating a chocolate cake fresh out of the oven, becoming a gospel partner. These are some of the best feelings in the world, and you can experience one of them right now. Supporting Wretched means helping spread the gospel, equipping the saints, and strengthening the local church. And every penny you give is carefully and gratefully stewarded. If you are not a Wretched gospel partner, would you consider becoming one today? Not only will it keep Wretched on the air, but it'll feel better than a hug from your grandma. Well, pretty close anyway. If you are a gospel partner, please know we are eternally grateful for your faithfulness and your generosity. So please, consider becoming a Wretched monthly gospel partner. Visit wretched.org/donate today. It's that simple. Wretched.org/donate to become a gospel partner. Wretched.org/donate.
If you're like most people, you have a passion to see souls saved, but don't know where to start. Might I suggest Hearts for the Lost? They assist local pastors and church congregations by helping them equip the saints with biblical principles for personal evangelism. They fly out to your church, put on an evangelism seminar, and then go out into the streets with you to put it into practice. And it's all free. To learn more or to schedule a conference, go to heartsforthelost.com. HeartsForTheLost.com.
titles of Christ. In the Bible, Jesus is given many titles that teach us about who he is and what he has done. Jesus is called the firstborn. Jesus was the firstborn from death, resurrected that we may have life, and he is the firstborn over all creation, the preeminent Son, through whom we are adopted as sons and daughters of God the Father.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Let's go talk about the book we all read.
You know they're dangerous.
Take a look, it's in a book.
So many books, so little time.
This is Wretched Radio with perhaps one of the funniest, saddest book reviews ever. It's a schadenfreude. It's both at once. There's a book that is ripping its way up the charts. It's being recommended in corporations. It's being recommended in churches. It's being recommended among different ethnic groups. And it has become a bestseller titled White Fragility, a book review of said tome written by Samuel Say from slowtowrite.com. I like this kid. Never met him. I do believe that he goes to Tim Challey's church in Canada. He's originally from Ghana, and he is a very fine writer, and he chose to do a review of White Fragility. Enjoy. When I was a boy in Ghana, writes Samuel, I once had a massive nail pierced through my foot, and I suffered through a makeshift surgery by mom without anesthesia, and that was significantly more enjoyable than reading this book. There you have it right there. Which would you prefer, reading White Fragility or having a nail slammed through your foot? Apparently, according to Samuel Say, take the latter because the former is more painful. It's astonishingly bad, and yet, understand it, we ought, because this is the book that is influencing so many people. And as Christians, as we review it, we can recognize that it is astonishingly dumb. But we need to ask, what is the assault on Christianity, especially as Christians are being asked to read this in their church? Why? So that they can be woke to understand how racist they are, whether they know it or not. This book is written, it was written actually in 2018, but it's making its way back by an individual who is way too influential. This book is designed to help you to understand how terrible you are. Now, as a rule here at Wretched, we ain't got no problems with that. As long as it's good old biblical godly conviction, this book is anything but biblical, and yet Christians recommending it and endorsing it and handing it to their white brothers and sisters, a phrase I disdain, but nevertheless, let's suffer with Samuel Say. White Fragility, why it's so hard for white people to talk about racism. Anybody really have a problem talking about it? Anybody really? Nevertheless, it's one of the best-selling books right now and one of the worst books I've ever read, writes Samuel Say. It's the most recommended anti-racist book in the world by Robin DiAngelo. She says, quote, now you really have to, sadly, as dumb as this book is, you really have to put on your thinking cap, because there are so many things that are written. It's so much new language with new definitions that you really have to think your way through it. It's not written like, well, Calvin uses words and sentence structures that are just, okay, I got to slow down my read on this one to just get it. No, this is, you just have to slow it down because this is a new language. This is a new dictionary. She writes this. None of the people whose actions I describe in this book would identify as racist. In fact, they would most likely identify as racially progressive and vehemently deny and any complicity with racism. Yet, all their responses illustrate white fragility and how it holds racism in place. Basically, this is your critical theory in action. You, as a white person, don't know how racist you are. And so when somebody points it out to you, and you defend yourself saying, I don't think so, I don't tend to have that attitude, even if we can even understand these days what racism actually means, nevertheless, that aside.
Prejudice plus power.
Well, racism, the problem...
What does that mean?
That's the new definition.
I understand that. In order to be racist, you have to have power. But nevertheless, the word racism, what exactly does that mean? What is that? Do I have a heart trajectory that sees somebody with different melanin, which is the only distinction that we're describing here, because a black person can mate with a white person, and guess what they have? A person. That should tell you how the variations in our DNA are so insignificant, we can actually breed. Nevertheless, it seems that racism is kind of used without an understanding of what the definition is. And historically, it's been, I'm better than you. I look at you and I know I'm better than you because of your outward appearance. I'm sure there are people like that. I'm sure there are. But is that how you're walking around viewing people? You're white, you walk by a black person and go, I sure am glad I'm not like him. Really? Is that how you're thinking? Is anybody? Yeah, okay, fine. People who put white sheets on and burn crosses. But can somebody even have a thought like that? Yep, sure can. But does that define who a person is and what their heart is? I don't even know. Furthermore, by the way, racism, it's more about group than it is about individual. That, again, is more critical theory, that these days racism, it's institutional as opposed to individual. Nevertheless, however the term is being used, when you deny that you are, that just demonstrates how bad it is for you. See, you don't even know how racist you are because you don't think you're racist. That just demonstrates how terrible you really are. Wow. That is some mind reading. That is white fragility, reviewed by Samuel Say, saying, I read White Fragility over 4 days, and it damaged me in each of the 4 days. The book is more damaging than any massive nail to my foot. Robin DiAngelo has managed to accomplish the difficult task of writing a book that is simultaneously anti-white and white supremacist. She accomplishes both. Because the way she goes about describing white people and their attitudes is the same way that a white supremacist would talk. And she apparently would be guilty, too, if anybody who's white is going to be guilty of this. What does it say about our culture when one of the most racist books I've ever read is considered by many to be the best book on racism? It says that the issue is confused right now. We're not speaking the same language. This cannot be overstated. Critical theory has so altered the ability for two people groups to communicate, it's staggering. It has been massively successful in that language, terms, paradigms, understandings. We just have such a different starting place, you cannot have a conversation. And so we look at this and we're like, well, that's actually being racist. No, 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 no. And by you saying that, it just proves how much more racist you really are. Okay, I came over. Samuel Say, we're apparently so distracted and so deceived by false definitions of racism, we're seemingly no longer able to discern what real racism looks like. That's a problem. It redefines racism and sin so predictably destructive and that disastrous conclusions come from it that you can't have any reconciliation. Furthermore, as has been noted with critical theory, there's no forgiveness, there's no grace, there's no mercy. You get what? Canceled! You know what Christianity is? It's the uncanceled religion. Critical theory is the cancel movement, and white fragility is leading the way. She says, quote, a positive white identity is an impossible goal. A positive white identity is an impossible goal. What are you saying, Robin? White identity is inherently racist. White people do not exist outside the system of white supremacy. That's pretty offensive language. If you're white, you just got lumped in with white supremacist groups. This is being promoted in churches? What in the world? White Fragility is a racist and anti-white book, and if we really lived in an anti-black culture, like D'Angelo claims, her anti-white book wouldn't be a bestseller. How ironic is that? If you haven't seen the book, heard about the book, that book is going to make its way, or at least knock on the door of your church. Put it next to another book and see if they say the same thing. And the answer is White Fragility is as biblical as, oh, I don't know, the Quran, as any terrible book. Let's put it next to the Standard, the Straight Stick, and it is a very crooked book. This is Wretched Radio.
It is ingenious when you think about it. The Mission Ball is a simple soccer ball covered with biblical text. An effective tool for drawing a crowd, making a connection with people, inviting curiosity, and ultimately creating opportunities to proclaim the gospel. Because the Mission Ball is covered with a thorough law and gospel presentation written in ink that doesn't come off very easily. Find out how you can support the Mission Ball. Go to themissionball.org. Themissionball.org.
Names of God. We learn a lot about God from the names given to him in Scripture. One name is Jehovah Jireh, God will provide. When we were dead in sin and unrighteousness, God provided the righteousness he requires in Jesus Christ, our substitute. If God has provided for our salvation, how much more is he able to meet our daily needs? This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
And here's a book for your kids. This is Wretched Radio. Did you know coming this fall to a school near you, if they open, they're going to be getting the Black Lives Matter curriculum. Oh, cool. Presenting themes such as systemic racism, police brutality, and white privilege. According to the Federalist, the curriculum is coming to a school near you. You say, well, that's probably just New York City. It is. North Carolina's largest school system, Wake County, launched a website providing BLM lessons for teachers to use in classrooms and for parents to use at home. Of course, Black Lives Matter, when it's not capitalized, is an obvious statement for the Christian. I mean, duh. If anybody can say that they matter, it's Christians. An evolutionary worldview can't. Nevertheless, the capitalized BLM, that's a big problem for a lot of reasons that we've discussed before. But now they're going to start bringing it into the schools and teaching it to your children. Step one, according to the curriculum, recognize your white privilege. Step two, learn the do's and don'ts of being an ally. Step three, recruit more members to learn steps one and two. And then, where are we left? We're left nowhere because it doesn't teach anything about how to correct bad thinking, bad believing. All it does is foster animosity and break down a culture. That is the very essence of what Black Lives Matter is all about. And it's going to be taught to your kids as it's being taught to the adults. The book that is ripping its way through the bestseller list is White Fragility. Robin DiAngelo has been a leader in propagating such bad thinking. I'm not even taking it from a biblical standpoint. I mean, just bad thinking. Like, huh? What color is the sky in your world? What universe do you inhabit? Because it doesn't sound like the reality that I observe. Nevertheless, this anti-white, anti-biblical book, which offers no hope, nothing but division, is at its core racist itself and Marxist. And it wins because, if nothing else, it's so confusing. And yet it's like, yeah, that sounds good. Let me give you an example of the confusion that she is perpetuating and what this book sounds like. Try to track along. Racism is a systemic, societal, institutional, omnipresent, and epistemologically embedded phenomenon that pervades every vestige of our reality. Whew. What a statement. For most whites, however, racism is like murder. The concept exists, but someone has to commit it in order for it to happen. The limited view of such a multi-layered syndrome cultivates the sinister nature of racism and, in fact, perpetuates racist phenomenon rather than eradicates them. Okie dokie. So I think the way that I understand that is, unless you actually see it happening, you don't think it exists. I think that's what she said. Furthermore, did you hear this claim? Racism is a systemic, societal, institutional, omnipresent, and epistemologically embedded phenomenon that pervades every vestige of our reality. Well, that's just observationally untrue. It's just ridiculous. Nevertheless, it persists. And I think you and I would do well to try to understand this term systemic racism. Definitions are really crucial in this conversation. Is America systemically racist? Well, to answer that question, you have to ask the question, what do you mean by systemic? Systemic means the systems are busted. All right, let's try to tackle this from a Christian perspective. Are people sinners? That's a no-brainer. Yes, we are. Do people, therefore, operate inside of systems like government? Well, yes. Yes, we do. Does that mean they bring their sinfulness into the system? Absolutely. Does that mean, therefore, that everyone in culture is that way? That's the leap right there. The presentation by Robin DiAngelo is that the systems are entirely corrupt, from top to bottom racist, because there are racist people, predominantly whites, working in them. And they are inherently racist, whether they know it or not. Therefore, the systems are racist. Okay, first of all, a system itself can't be racist. Nevertheless, it can have advantages or disadvantages for a particular people group, do good or bad. We have to admit that. That is the problem. Is they go, well, see, that's systemic racism. No, it's not. Let's use a different subject to help perhaps bring some clarity to this. Abortion. Would you ever say America is systemically abortion-minded?
No.
You can't say that, clearly. No. I think even still, most of Americans, at least their nothing else, their intuitions tell them, no, that's bad. And there's certainly the robust pro-life movement. So by saying that the system is pro-abortion, which it is right now. The system in America is pro-abortion. How did it get there? Well, Margaret Sanger, all of the activist judges, Roe v. Wade, Planned Parenthood, the Clintons, you name it. Those are people who have made a system that is pro-bad activity. But does that mean everybody in America is that? Of course it doesn't. That's the leap. So when people say that the systems are racist, we've just got to stop and go, hold on, we've got a little bit of agreement on that, but not total. And that's difficult, isn't it? Because that just requires more thinking, more time, more words. So is America systemically racist? You have to answer that question on its face and say, not the way you're intending it to mean. There can be systems that are bad, and we've seen that. Come on, we can all say, yes, we've seen it, haven't we? Slavery, Jim Crow. There have been some banking practices, even recently. The redlining, we've seen these things. Now, does that mean that every banker is racist? No, it doesn't. It means somebody who, for whatever their thinking was, and I don't even know, quite honestly, put something in place that is a disadvantage to a people group. Now, I don't even know what their thinking was behind it. Nevertheless, that doesn't make the entire system of America corrupt and racist. It means some sinful people participated in the system and have done some sinful things. That's what it means. Robin DiAngelo would tell you, nope, that's not what it means. Racism is a systemic, societal, institutional, omnipresent. Always
everywhere.
It's everywhere all the time. An epistemologically embedded phenomenon that pervades every single vestige of our reality. That's utter nonsense. And that's being taught in evangelical circles, and it's now going to be taught to your kids. The worst part, anti-racism isn't interested in changing sinners. It's interested in changing systems. That's why the term systemic racism is so pervasive. The systems are corrupt. We need to get rid of these systems. Which ones? Well, if they're omnipresent, well, embedded everywhere in society, they all need to go. That's what this is about. This is why they label biblical Christians racist. Because we see sin as an individual thing that we can do corporately when we get together and do a bad act. But that doesn't mean that everything in every system is corrupt to the core, and that even though it represents a people group, not everybody in that people group is that. And that is demonstrable. Nevertheless, in anti-racism, which is this movement, anti-racism, it's another term that can be used for social gospel, more likely, not social gospel as much as cultural theory. The gospel is irrelevant and racist. Essentially anything that isn't in conformity to anti-racism is itself racist, including the gospel of Jesus Christ. Anti-racists, like Robin DiAngelo, who's one of the leaders in this movement, aren't interested in repentance from sinners. They're only interested in revolutions against systems. Anti-racists believe racism resides in a white person's skin color, not in our hearts. How deficient is this worldview? How low and unhelpful is their solution, their prognosis and their solution? It's quite pathetic, really. The book doesn't offer any real hope for both victims and perpetrators of racism. And yet, the book, an anti-racist ideology, is infiltrating Christian circles. That is probably the saddest thing of all, that evangelicals, because of a lot of chin boogie, a lot of, they want to help. They really, you have to, if somebody is getting into the white fragility, we let's try to think as positively as possible. We're called to do that, to put the best construction on it. It's a desire to do good. Okay, we can applaud that. But how we go about doing it is got to be driven by the Bible. And not by, well, frankly, Marxist ideologies painted over in a veneer of modern-day philosophical techno-speak that makes it sound like it's attempting to do good, but all it will do is divide people. It will offer no hope. And if that ain't enough, it'll cause an entire society to divide and crumble. Which is the goal of Marxism? This is Wretched Radio. Perhaps you're thinking to yourself, self, when Friel encourages us to support preborn at preborn.org/wretched by providing as many ultrasounds as possible for women who are experiencing a crisis pregnancy for just $28 per ultrasound, it feels so financial, so cold, so detached, so permit me to personalize my plea.
Hi, my name is Isabella.
Hi, my name is Victoria.
We are 6 years old. Thank you for helping us.
A $28 ultrasound. Two lives saved. This isn't just about $28. This is about real human beings. Mommies see that it's a baby in their tummy. They hear the gospel. Daddy hears the gospel. Babies are saved. Souls are getting saved. Please consider supporting Preborn with as many ultrasounds as you can. Preborn.org/wretched.
We get it. This new normal is, well, not yet normal. So if you're tired of surfing through whatever streaming services you have, then might I suggest checking out The Man Who Split Time. Imagine a man who lived such an extraordinary life that Western civilization changed the entire calendar system to commemorate his birthday. The obvious question would be,
who was that man? And what did he do to deserve such an unprecedented honor? Well, that man doesn't have to be imagined. That individual is Jesus Christ. The Man Who Split Time, 22 Proofs Jesus is God, is the perfect booklet to give to any skeptic or unbeliever who thinks that Jesus was just a mere mortal. Get your copies now at wretched.org/time and start giving them away to anyone and everyone. The Man Who Split Time, 22 Proofs Jesus is God, is waiting now at wretched.org/time.
And in the meantime, while we in the West are still experiencing struggles and challenges courtesy of COVID in Eastern Europe, the effects have been even more profound. Nevertheless, Tomorrow Club's continuing their great ministry work in European countries.
Right now, Tomorrow Club leaders are putting together more than 2,000 care packages to deliver to the neediest families in the towns and villages we serve. The packages will provide enough food for a couple of weeks, basic food items like buckwheat, macaroni, rice, canned meat, oil. There's even a package of candies for the kids and, in some places, seeds for the garden. And because most of these packages will be going to unbelieving families, along with the food items, there'll be a simple gospel presentation.
Would you please consider supporting Tomorrow Clubs at this time? Wonderful gospel ministry reaching the poorest of the poor in Eastern Europe. Please learn more. TomorrowClubs.org/wretched.
Books of the Bible. Philippians was written by Paul from a Roman prison. It is often called the Epistle of Joy for its encouraging tone. In this letter, Paul encourages the Philippians to live in a manner worthy of the gospel by steadfastness and humility in Christ and cheerful obedience to God, who is working in us to bring about his good pleasure. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
The gospel is about us. White fragility. This is Wretched Radio. We are seeing a cultural movement that has seeped its way into the church. And if we're not careful, we won't see it encroaching on important theologies, what the church has to offer to the world. We ourselves could get swept away by it. Not only will it corrupt the culture, but it can corrupt your church, cause division in the body, and it will diminish the glory of God, who is the one who says, I want unity, and I can bring it about through my Son, the Lord Jesus Christ. Critical theory, white fragility, the social justice movement, the anti-racism movement is the opposite of the unifying message of the gospel. Don't let it into your church. It's going to cause division. Maybe it is already. And that is precisely its intended goal. And that is why we want to keep it out. Not because we have a desire to be racist. Not because we have a desire to not deal with any injustices that may exist in our culture, but because we don't want the gospel of Jesus Christ corrupted. And that's exactly what it's doing, and far too many evangelicals are promoting anti-biblical ideologies motivated rightly. I believe that perhaps a lot of it is being swept up by the cultural movement in this massive trend that is taking place right in front of our very eyes. And we have to reject it. And we need to be careful. This is just staggering to me. It's just everywhere. I'm looking at my desk, and it's like all this white stuff. Gentlemen, how long have we been doing this together? 15 years, give or take, right?
Yes.
Something like that? Okay. Have we, over the years, until like recently, spent this much time talking about white news?
It's just so omnipresent that we just don't even notice it because we're racist.
Yes,
look,
sorry.
What color is all that paper in front of you?
That's not my point. But I get your point. But my point is, this just isn't a lens that we've ever been looking through. Okay. Rolling Stone writer claims the term pro-life is tied to racism. Huh? Why am I dealing with this dopiness? Okay, this is a major international influential magazine. Rolling Stones claims pro-life is tied to racism. What? Here's the details. A senior writer claims that the term pro-life is tied to racism and misogyny and feels that the movement is, quote, killing us. There's some irony. The term should be canceled. Quote, the point cannot be emphasized enough or too often. The moniker pro-life, so often used in the service of not just misogyny but also racism, should be retired right along with Aunt Jemima and the Redskins team name. Wow. 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 The division. Now, just on that front alone, if this movement is about dividing, because it is, that's it. That's the end game in this, is divide and crumble the current systems. That is the goal. This really, y'all, as best I see it, is not really about skin colors. That's something we're happy to talk about from a biblical perspective. That's really not the agenda here. This is all about dividing. This is not about unifying. This article, he was responding to a tweet from the Reverend Dr. William J. Barber II. Nice. Who somehow tied corporate greed and white political power to the pro-life movement. Quote, ironically, the governors most willing to watch their citizens die are the ones who have used pro-life rhetoric to compel people of faith to support the narrow interests of corporate greed and white political power. COVID has revealed how the pro-life movement is killing us. Okay. This is the way the world is seeing things. This is your neighbor. This is the harvest field. You going to straighten out this knuckleheadery? Really? Do we really think that rhetoric is going to fix what is so profoundly broken? We needed something a little bit more supernatural. In the meantime, the Smithsonian, hard work and nuclear family are signs of whiteness. Did you know that? That's right. Whiteness and the normalization of white racial identity in America has created a culture where non-white persons are seen as inferior or abnormal. This was published at the National Museum of African American History and Culture. Aspects of whiteness and white culture included in an emphasis on the scientific method, which involves objective, rational, linear thinking, cause and effect relationships, and quantitative emphasis, are all white concepts. This is staggering to me. This is staggering. Ideas or ideologies, concepts, I'll even say a system that through centuries and by applying the Bible to these ideas that have demonstrated themselves to be good are now labeled as white and are therefore bad. Are you tracking with your new normal? Here's what they're saying. These things that you and I look at and say, oh, these are good for human flourishing. These are biblical ideas. So ideas like family units being intact, that's a biblical thing. That's a good thing. No, that's a white thing. Therefore, we, like Black Lives Matter states, want to do away with the nuclear Western family because it's attached to whiteness. That's what we're having to work with when we're talking to somebody. I do not know a way to reason with this. I just don't know a way. If nothing else, this should be bringing us to the end of our Christian rope and causing us to say, look, this whole conversation is an impossible conversation to have. Rutgers now, they want to stop having grammatical rules be enforced to identify with the black community. Did you catch that? Here's the assumption, and this should offend every black person on the planet. Black people don't use grammar correctly, consistently. Therefore, to accommodate that, we are not going to be giving a red mark to somebody who uses improper grammar. Why? Because good grammar is a white thing.
Really?
You Rutgers. Rutgers. Go ahead. Go talk to the dean and just reason with him, her. Go fix that. You can't do it. Furthermore, this to me is just staggeringly offensive. Black people can't use good grammar? What? But there is a theme here, by the way. So objective, rational, linear thinking, that's a white idea. Very bad, according to this Smithsonian Museum. It's all white. Cause and effect relationships, that's a white idea. Quantitative emphasis, very bad, because that's a white thing. Other aspects of whiteness include planning for the future, delayed gratification, valuation of time as a commodity, decision-making, self-reliance, and politeness. That is according to the Smithsonian Museum in Washington, D.C., called the National Museum of African American History and Culture.
Those are white constructs.
That is correct, sir. The museum warned that the dominance of white culture in America leads to an internalized racial superiority for those who adhere to it, and said a key stop to ending racism is for white people to acknowledge their white racial identity and its privileges. This is getting to the closer to the bullseye here. Because if indeed it's true that Marxism is lurking in the bushes and the design is to tear down all cultures and systems, how do you do that? You make sure that all of the current culture, all the current systems are identified as bad. And it is being done under the guise of they're all racist, which we all recognize is bad. Therefore, all of the systems are bad. This is about culture. Because if you don't have something that holds a culture together, you don't have a culture. If you don't have a language, think Tyndale and Luther. What did they do for Western civilization? Among other things, they codified the English and the German language, and it advanced their nations. Rutgers wants to do what? If having a common language brings a nation together and causes flourishing, what will having a disparate language do? It'll bring corruption. That's what we're seeing. I find it offensive, sad, duplicitous, and anti-biblical, and illogical to the point that if we as Christians think that we can join this somehow and kind of work with it, we're fools. And if we think that we can reason somebody out of what is entirely unreasonable, we also are fools. And the only thing that people need that will change their thinking is that when their believing is changed, they need the gospel. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.